vocal week because I'm not known to be a singer. I travel 12 months a year, nobody let me sing at home. And the music I play, we call it hillbilly blues. I learned how to play guitar from older black gentlemen that made records in the 20s and 30s. And lately I found out that a lot of the music they learned how to play, they learned from older white gentlemen in the 20s and 30s. And I thought that was pretty interesting. I always thought that the young guitar playing blues singer was a thing that really happened in the 60s during the folk revival when some of the great old black musicians were rediscovered. And I always knew Jimmy Rogers, of course, was kind of a blues singer, but there were 40 or 50 recorded white fellas playing the guitar and singing the blues back before World War II. And that's kind of what I do, and I'll tell you a little bit about it here and there. The first song of my presentation will be a song I learned from an old friend of mine named Pink Anderson, who was a black fellow from Spartanburg, South Carolina. He made two records in 1929, that was that. The records he recorded in 29 were very much blues songs. And when I met Pink in the 60s, his material didn't really sound quite the same as the style he played in the 20s. See, in the 20s, the record companies used to kind of dictate what people played. They had it in their heads that black people would play blues and white people would play hillbilly music. And there were some incredible black hillbillies out there playing fiddles and banjos that never got to record because the industry didn't think that was what was, you couldn't turn that into money too quick, so they didn't. This song that Pink Anderson, I got from him, it's actually, as I look back in my research, I did a lot of looking back when I got this position to teach a course here. I never looked back as seriously as I did in the last few months. And many of the blues songs and the hillbilly songs and the folk songs of America really weren't folk songs at all. Many of them were written on Tin Pan Alley on Broadway in New York City and then filtered back into the folk tradition. And that's kind of interesting because so many people always think that the folk songs came that came from the British Isles, you know? And many of them didn't come from the British Isles, it came from Broadway. This song was popularized in the late 1800s by minstrel men that toured, you know, in blackface and actually did parodies of what somebody thought black people should be like. And it's kind of funny that a lot of white people sang the songs as parodies in blackface, and a lot of black men sang the same songs in blackface, white eyes, and all that. This is a song called I Got Mine, and I hope you enjoy it. Well, I went down to a big crap game, and it certainly was against my will. You know I lost every gosh darn nickel that I had but a greenback dollar bill. I said a $40 bet was laying on the floor, and my buddy's point was 9. But when the police come, they grabbed all of us. Ooh, I got mine. Yep, I got mine. I got mine. You know I got it all that good sport. I've been shooting dice all this time. Some of them boys got 30 days, whilst others, they got 9. The police come, they got all of us, but I got mine. Now let me tell you all about a barber shop right here on Old Walker Street. You know it's the onlyest place on a Saturday night that the gambling men do meet. Now some of them will come for a haircut, and others come for a scrap. Me and my buddies going up that way. We're gonna mean to shoot some craps. Gonna holler now, 7-11. Won't you come, come, come? And if you don't, 7-11, die some. Dun, dun, dun. If I see the police, for he sees me, I'm gonna run, run, run. 'Cause I'm the leader of the high society folks since I got mine. Now let me tell you all about a turkey feed. You know the dinner was certainly fine. 15 minutes before before the table got set, all them jitterbugs fell in line. And when they brought those gobblers out, them rascals I did shine. You can talk about a rascal, I grabbed in. I got mine, old Picket Roy. Best gal's house, the hour it was just about nine. I wasn't dressed up like Henry Ford, I was looking mighty doggone fine. I caught her sitting in another rascal's lap, and I didn't like that sign. Told that rascal what I thought about him. Much. I first met Pink Anderson in Spartanburg, South Carolina, not by accident. I was looking for him, and it was rumored to be from Spartanburg. He was recorded there by Samuel Charters in 1960, and I was looking in 1967, and I got down to Spartanburg, and it wasn't easy to find his house, but I found it, and I called up the number in the phone book. You know, what a way to look. And I was sitting in a restaurant, all depressed. I'd asked everybody in every pool hall in Spartanburg where the old blues man Pink Anderson lived. Nobody knew. I was sitting in a Howard Johnson's, really depressed, and the waitress says, "What's the matter, honey?" I said, "I'm looking for this old guy that was supposed to be from Spartanburg, and I've asked everybody in every likely place." She said, "Oh, you ought to just look him up in a phone book." I said, "Pink Anderson will be in the phone book." Is this a romantic way to make a rediscovery? So on the way out of the restaurant, I thumbed through the pages there, and right under Paul was Pink. I couldn't believe it. The Lord works in mysterious ways. I called up this number, and the lady said Pink Anderson lived there, but he wasn't home. I could come by. He was expected. So I got directions. Drove down Carpenter Street in Spartanburg to the Carpenter Street Extension, which is a dirt road off Carpenter Street. Got down there, knocked on the door, and a lady came to the door, and she says, "What do you want?" I said, "I'm looking for Pink Anderson." She said, "Well, I'm looking for Pink Anderson myself." I said, I talked to you on the phone." She said, "Oh, you're that young man." She said, "Well, you can wait on the porch. You can't come in the house. I'm here by myself." God bless her. She was close to 80 years old. She said, "You sit out there, you'll be all right." So I sat there for a while, and about 2 hours went by, and I was getting mad at Pink. He was going to be in for it when he got home. The lady told me he went to the dry cleaners at 8 o'clock in the morning. Nobody goes to the dry cleaners at 8 o'clock in the morning. About 2 hours went by, and I took out my guitar and started to pick some of his old songs, because it seemed like the thing to do, sitting on his porch, kids playing in the puddles, chickens running by, springtime in Spartanburg. What a sight. It's going to be a memorable scene in the life, in the motion picture version of my life story. I can really see it. After a while, I saw Pink was coming down the streets. I put my guitar down. I walked up towards him as he was coming down towards me. And we got real close, nose to nose. I said, "You must be Pink Anderson." He said, "How'd you know that?" I said, "Well, the lady in the house said that Mr. Anderson went to the dry cleaners this morning, and this is a dead-end street. You're carrying clothes." He said, "You've been to college?" I said, "Some." I said, "Pink, I just drove 36 hours looking for you." He says, "I owe you money?" I said, "No, sir. I owe you money." He says, "How much?" I said, about $50. He says, give it cheers. So I reached in my pocket and pulled out my roll of ones and peeled off a 50 and gave him a 50. He looked at it, put it in his pocket. He said, how'd it come to be that you owed me $50 after he put it in his pocket? I said, I made a record of one of your songs a couple years ago. And this is your cut. He said, was it a hit? I said, you be the judge. $50 is a lot of money. He said, you right. We became real good friends, me and Pink. Friendship's still pretty cheap in some parts of South Carolina. Oh, this is going to be a good time. I didn't know what I was going to say when I got here. So one day we're sitting out on the porch in front of Pink's house, and he had arthritis. He didn't play the guitar anymore, which was too bad. But we just sit around and chat, you know. And one day he says to me, Roy, that's what he used to call me. And I said, so I said, Pink, he says, you know them old songs of mine that you were, can almost play right? I said, yeah. He said, well, I'm giving them to you. You just tell people, Pink Anderson, born and getting ready to die here in Spartanburg, South Carolina. He used to could sing the blues and play the guitar, but he got too old for it. So they're yours now. So just played you one of my early hits there. Play another one. This one Mr. Pink put out in 1927 on Columbia Records. It's a valuable collector's item. Anybody finds me an old Columbia 78 says Pink Anderson on it, I give him a $100 bill for that. No questions asked if it's not cracked. It can be scratched, but no cracks. So old records are worth money. Now, I recorded the same song in 1976 for the famous Blue Goose Record Company, and it too immediately became a rare collector's item. However, they got some of my records in the store here, and if they run out, I got a truck full of them. I know I'm supposed to sing, but I'm having a good time. I'll play you this old blues song. This is a different kind of blues song. Like the I Got Mine, it was more like a minstrel song. It came out of a different tradition. This here was an old blues that Pink made up. He recorded it in 27 with his friend Blind Simmy Dooley that taught him how to play the guitar. A lot of people here are taking a course on how to play the guitar, some with me and some with other people. And it's a lot of fun to learn to play a guitar. Pink told me when he was learning to play the guitar from Blind Simmy, they'd go off in the woods, and Pink would be playing the guitar, and if he didn't move his fingers fast enough, Simmy would hit him with a switch. He said he learned to play real fast. This is the CC&O Blues. This one's a little harder for me to sing. I'm one of these folk musicians that used to play into with microphones and sound systems and all that, but I'll do my best. You call... wrong song. A lot of them start the same. It can fool you when you're nervous. I'm not used to getting up in front of crowds this time. Train, y'all call her CC Line. father too. My mama told me, so did father too. Said, don't let that CCNO son beat the death of you. Wonder where that engineer is going. I wonder where that engineer is going. I feel like riding if it's all day long.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So many old kinds of blues songs, and really in the olden days they called it a blues song if a black man recorded it, and they called it a hillbilly song if a white man recorded it. And that was all invented by Ralph Peer, who started the, he was in the record industry back in those days. He's the man that invented the terms hillbilly and race records. And he also invented, he was the cleverest one of them all. He was a high paid record executive that got too big for his britches. Nobody could pay his salary, and he went out on his own, and that didn't work. He went back to the record companies after he conceived this idea. He said, you hire me for no salary, and I will find talent and record the talent. Well, how could you turn that down? But this man invented the royalty. In the olden days before this, before 1925 or so, if you recorded for a company, you got paid a flat fee, $50 a song if you were lucky. Mr. Peer invented the royalty. He'd give you $30 and he'd give you, 4 cents a record forever. And he might get 3 cents a record forever himself. This was a clever idea. It created loyalty to the record company. Blind Willie McTell was told you're going to get royalties on this song forever. It's better than a record for somebody to give you $50, right? After the first 2 years, Ralph Peer's personal profit was over $1 million. He was a clever fellow. Create something from nothing and get rich, that's clever. Now this is a song from the, I was tend to think of this as a hillbilly blues song, and though I know the song was sung by white people and black people both, I got the song from an old 78 RPM record by Dick Justice, who was from West Virginia, I believe, and he learned the song from Bayless Rose. That's my favorite name. If I ever have a son, I'm going to name him Bayless Bookbinder. BBB. Bayless Rose and Dick Justice grew up in the same area and learned how to play the guitars together, and they recorded about 6 of the same exact songs, but one was in the hillbilly catalog and one was in the blues catalog, the only difference between being the color of the guitar player. At one point, the Allen Brothers, who were a hillbilly group, they did a song called Maybe Next Week Sometime, and the record company thought that it'd be a killer song to sell to the black market, and they issued it as a race record. Well, the Allen Brothers were hysterical. They sued for $2 million that their record should come out in a race catalog. Oh, my God. The suit was finally dropped when they started realizing how much money they were making. The record company was right. They're not always right, but this is a song called The Black Dog Blues. This is one I've been teaching my guitar students down the road a piece. It's the kind of song, like I've been telling my students, it can be a real simple song, and you can really add embellishments to it, like every time you play it, try to change different G chords and use a G down there or a G up here and make it as complicated as you can, because it just wows the people. And you get tired of playing the same thing over and over again anyway. If you're going to do a song with 6 verses and you can play it 6 different ways on a guitar, you'd be something. I'm working on it. Long. Well, I've been all around, kids. Kentucky and the state of old Tennessee, where I lay my hat down, said that 'twould be home for me. And it's old Black Dog when I'm gone. Lord, Lord, it's old Black Dog when I'm gone. Old Black Dog. See that train is coming, it's carrying my baby away, and it's going on far to leave me, ain't never coming back my way. My daddy, he was a gambling man from the state of old Tennessee, and he taught me to bet all of my money on ace, jack, that deuce, and a tray. And it's old Black Dog when I'm gone. Lord, Lord, but when I get home with a $10 bill, is Daddy where you been so long? Thank you. Now, a lot of people think of the word blues, and they think of a thing that goes like, play us a blues, Roy. And they go, or they think, that's kind of the standard thing people expect, or... blueses. It's a term that almost shouldn't exist because it covers so many things. I've been to shows and people come up to me and they say, man, you call yourself a blues singer, you didn't do nothing by Muddy Waters. Say, he didn't do nothing by me, did he? While back I was, everybody gets the blues sometime, don't they? I was on tour with B.B. King and Bobby Blue Bland in Florida and Georgia a couple years ago. It was one of the highlights of my career. I was kind of hired as the novelty act. Warm up the crowd, you know? Sometimes it's called the popcorn act. They said they could have a break and sell their dry goods, you know? And every time I work with a great singer, a great player, I try to learn at least one little thing from him, right? Every night, B.B. King would get out in front of his audience and say, everybody gets the blues. Boy, and people would be screaming, amen, hallelujah. Women would be fainting right there on the spot. So now every time I do a presentation, I'll say, everybody gets the blues. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Anyway, this is a song written about the last time. Take it easy now. Take it easy. Here's a blues song written about the last time the King of England had the blues. Everybody gets them. was 1936. King Edward, you see, he was involved with Mrs. Simpson. You've read about it in the paper. She just passed away. God bless her. A divorced woman, and this was frowned upon by the powers above. Now, back in Polk City, Florida, where I've come to call home, we always figured if you made it to king, that was it. We know about powers above. But there was. They had a big meeting at the castle, I guess, one night, and they said, Edward, you can't be involved with Mr. Simpson and wear the crown of England. He says, why not? I've been doing it for years. And he took the crown off, and he said, keep that son of a gun. I love that woman. And they went off and lived happily ever after for 28 beautiful years. Well, that made international headlines in 36. In this country, it was the front page of the Inquirer magazine for the entire month of June. Newsboys were shouting on street corners, the headline, King abdicates throne for love of Mrs. Simpson. Remember when the newsboys used to holler on the street corners? Remember? All right, I'm telling the truth. I got witnesses. Right there in Atlanta, Georgia, the legendary 12-string guitar player, a blind man named Willie McTell, was singing in front of a Piggly Wiggly supermarket. He hears the newsboy shouting, King abdicates throne for love of Mrs. Simpson. He was so moved by that, he immediately put this song in his repertoire. That's a French word. They call the song, Baby, It Must Be Love. Sometimes they called it the King Edward Blues. Tell me, honey, tell me, please. Is my lover hard to please? I'm getting groggy in my knees. Baby, it must be love. A funny feeling oozing up and down my spine. To my head like sherry wine. It makes me think that the world's all mine. Baby, it must be love. And I hear them church bells ringing. I see those visions clear. I hear those birdies singing. Good word, there ain't no birdies near. Tell me, honey, tell me, please. Is my lover hard to please? I'm getting groggy in my knees. Baby, it must be love. Now, I don't like your little suits and ties. You know that they don't never seem to harmonize. They don't match your big brown eyes. Baby, it must be love. Oh, pick it, Roy. Tell me, honey, tell me, please. Is my love hard to please? I'm getting groggy in my knees. Baby, it must be love. Rich man, a poor man, a beggar man, king. They can give up everything. Every time that you feel that sting, baby, it must be love. And I hear them church bells ringing. I see those visions clear. I hear those birdies singing. Good word, there ain't no birdies near. Tell me, honey, now tell me, please. Is my lover hard to please? I'm getting groggy in my knees. Baby, it must be. You know that it made a preacher put his Bible down. It made a rabbit hug a hound. It made King Edward give up his crown. Baby, it must, baby, it must, say, baby, it must be. Thank you very much. Now, that song was obviously written not down in the country. That's a city song. That's a copyrighted song by some songwriter on Tin Pan Alley for sure. Somebody, I owe money to somebody on that one. Not much. A lot of times when I record, I'll just put down the fella's name who I learned it from and figure if there's ever enough money involved where somebody cares, the right party will find me. Now here's a different kind of blues song. This is a Texas blues song. Different regions of the country actually had different styles of guitar playing. Like Mississippi, they play that mean blues. Thank you. I don't do much of that kind of blues because that's really the devil's music. I do a lighter kind of blues. This is a Texas blues by a great singer named Little Hat Jones. It had a big effect on my career. Little Hat Jones recorded 10 songs in his short career, all in June of 1929, actually. I've been telling people 6 in June and 4 in January, but I, doing some research, found out I was wrong. Takes a big man to admit that, but. He actually recorded 6 songs on June 11th and 4 songs on June 29th. And that was that. Never recorded again. I've been trying to find him. I got to Texas. I'm always asking people if they know where Little Hat Jones is, and they don't. Kind of a big state.
Check the phone book.
Yeah. Under L or H. I started just asking the blues singers I'd meet in Texas. I asked the great Lightnin' Hopkins one day before he passed away. I said,